welcome to the Men's Health Week podcast. My name's Jim Pollard and I'm editor of the Men's Health Forum websites. Are men more in touch with their emotions these days, or are we getting more unhappy? Here are two shocking statistics for you. Three times as many men kill themselves as women, yet three times as many women are treated for mental health problems as men. So there's something that doesn't add up. To discuss the difficult subject of depression, I turn to the funniest man I know, comedian John Ryan, who's won several awards for the way he looks at mental health problems in his comedy. John, you've been doing comedy for how long?
About 12 years.
And talking about men's health?
For about seven.
About seven.
Yeah.
Are men getting more unhappy? Is it harder to get a laugh out of us?
Yeah, I think it is harder to get a laugh nowadays, but I think that's because we live in a society where people have YouTube, so they already know what works and what doesn't work. Everyone watches X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, so they're all judges, and everyone's got an opinion. But also, I think people want more immediate gratification now, so some of the more whimsical, longer-winded stories that have got big payoffs, the audiences just don't want to go along for that ride.
Yeah. So you think there's some comedians who have been successful in the past who would struggle today? Sort of the guys who'd kind of sit down and tell you stories.
Yeah, if you look at someone like Jimmy Carr, Tim Vine, Michael McIntyre even, they have quite snappy little vignettes that you can just go, I'll have a minute of that.
Yeah.
But you go and see some other guys and they're doing stories. Like Russell Howard's a good example. Great storyteller. But that doesn't come across on TV.
Yeah.
It's got to be much more gaggy, much more punchier, much quicker.
Yeah.
And it's the same with two or three of the health stories I do are kind of 5 minute long, but they have a big, big payoff with a few little laughs along the way. And when I've been asked before to do recordings, they'll say, well, we can't use them. They're too long. And you think, well, actually, storytelling, before we were writing, we used to pass on all our traditions orally, didn't we, through storytelling?
Yeah.
But no, we're going to change that with podcasts.
Absolutely. What about men in general? I mean, are we depressed?
It seems to me that there are distinct groups of men who are depressed. I've got teenage boys, so I'm very aware of the pressures that they're under. But I'm also very aware of the fact that they're much more health conscious than we were at their age. So, I mean, I would wear antiperspirant. I didn't really wear aftershave when I was a teenager. That might have just been me, though. I was always scummy, according to my daughter. How she knows what I was like before I was born must be her mother's.
Inside information.
My sons would think nothing of maybe having a manicure or a pedicure. Or my second boy, he would live in a bathtub if you could provide him with food and Facebook. He wouldn't get out of the bath.
Mm.
So, you know, I think guys are much more aware. They want to have six packs. They want to look healthy. They want to look fit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's possible for everybody to look like they're fit and healthy and have six packs. I did some work in South Wales and I was with this guy from Latvia and we were talking about steroid abuse and it was amazing the amount of guys down there, and apparently in Eastern Europe it's big as well, who abuse steroids, and they're massive. They're bulked up, all cut and ripped like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Tiny testicles. So maybe
that is the downside of steroid abuse.
It is a bit. Very spotty backs and faces. But they want to look like a strong man.
Yeah.
Whereas if you watch old football matches on TV, like if you look at the England 1966 World Cup winning team, me and you could have got a game. apart from Bobby Moore, who walked on water, Bobby Charlton looks about 90,
George Cohen probably was a bit overweight then.
George. Again, works with him, very, very nice guy. Yeah. He's had health issues.
He had cancer, didn't he? Bowel cancer, George Cohen.
It strikes us all. I've got a mate of mine who's 33, and he's since the 1st of January, he's been drinking kelp and sea algae or something like that.
Who brews that then?
Yeah. He makes it in this liquid, special liquidizer he's got with a sieve.
Right.
Which costs like 200 quid. Well, mate,
if you spend that much on it, you've got to use it.
You want to lose weight, didn't you? But then my other mate, he's now coming to his 10th month of gym membership for £42 a month. He's been about four times.
Yeah.
It's got to be a bit more than just desire, isn't it?
depression's become is more and more of a problem. World Health Organization say it's going to become the biggest cause of ill health, even overtaking heart disease. Yet we're richer and we've got more stuff than we've ever had. How does that fit? How can we be more wealthier and more depressed?
I think it's because we're not designed for this kind of living.
Yeah.
That's all it is. We're not designed to live in boxes, drive in boxes to another box to work. We're not designed to have to be awake from 8 in the morning till 5 in the evening and then sit on a commuter train for 2 hours. We're not designed to eat like 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And as society kind of modernises, the pressures are more there to acquire material and consumer goods. We're just not designed for it. We don't need it.
Yeah.
I remember about 3 years ago, the mother-in-law bought us a TV and I was baffled because there was nothing wrong with the one we had.
Yeah.
But she wanted us to have a nice TV. We had a new house. I'm like, well, we got a TV. So, obviously, I'm really old-fashioned. But it's the same. I won't...
And now she's bought it, you feel obliged to watch it, so you're not getting any exercise.
I'll tell you what, now you can actually see the picture.
It's worth staying in. No point going down to the gym now.
It's like Christmas. The kids go, oh, we'll get you some new shirts. I've got shirts. Yeah, well, you need some new ones. But we just live in a society where consumerism has replaced kind of social interaction, haven't we? And that's got to have an effect on our mental health and our mental well-being.
But it seems to be affecting men more. Women are more likely to be diagnosed with depression, but men are more likely to kill themselves. So there's something going wrong somewhere. We're not getting diagnosed. We're going straight to the end.
But isn't it? I don't know. Really, I've done some work on a show called Cracking Up that we do. I now know that suicide is the main cause of death for
in young men. Yeah,
young men. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
Awful. But is it because we can't manage our expectations? Again, my son's mate, he wants to be famous. And I said, what are you going to be famous for? He said, I don't know yet. Now, I remember when you used to get famous because you're good at something.
Yeah.
Now you get famous by being on a reality show, committing some heinous crime, or, you know, sleeping with a celebrity.
So you got into comedy because you wanted to make people laugh rather than because you thought, I can be famous doing comedy.
No, it never occurred to me that I could be famous doing comedy. I could only become famous for having a mishap that wiped out half of humanity, like visiting a nuclear power station and going, what's that red button for? And falling on it. I was never going to invent anything or make the world a poorer place by leaving it. But now I meet young comics especially who've got a business plan. In 3 years they're going to be doing that, in 5 years they're going to be doing that, 10 years they're going to be doing that. I think that comics have a real responsibility and an opportunity to make a difference. But then that's,
is it time for, like, there was like the alternative comedy revolution in the 80s. Or is it time for another one?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because now the alternatives...
A little bit of politics.
Well, not even politics, because we used to have different political parties, didn't we? Whereas now, I don't know that there's any difference between the Conservatives, Lib Dems and Labour. I don't know there's a difference.
I think that is a really big cause of depression. I think the fact that you think you can't change anything, nothing you can do will change anything, is a very depressing state of mind.
Or is it that I, instead of getting depressed by it, manage my expectations and therefore I'm able to cope with the fact that I can't change things.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. You know, if I want something, I work, earn it and buy it. Whereas my mate, he wants something, he buys it, and then he's depressed because he's in debt. But he's got nice things.
Yeah.
So it's about, I just think it's that expectation management.
Yeah.
And I think that people, we are holistic bodies, so we have spiritual needs, we have physical needs, we have mental needs, we have social needs, and it's about how you fulfil all of those, isn't it?
And a lot of people neglect the spiritual ones and for the material ones.
Yeah, I'm not saying that everyone's got to believe in God. And,
no.
You know, I'm not a Bible basher. I'm not a religious fundamentalist or anything by any means. But I know the names of my neighbours.
Yeah.
Well, there's a start. Mate, let's have a get-to-know-your-neighbours day. I know that...
They do that in France, there is
do
a...
Do they?
Yeah.
It's French again, isn't it?
You meet all the les voisins.
What is it like a special day when everyone?
It's a special day. You have a thing in your block, and everyone who lives in that particular block will get together in the, you know, in the common area in the block or down the local restaurant, and
yeah, get to know each other. Every year, yeah. I never went, obviously.
Just not British, didn't you? Yeah. Oh, I don't get out of there. Don't anyone want to borrow something. But I think that I had a conversation with a very successful comedian who's a multi-millionaire who suffers from depression. And I said, maybe if you gave some of your money away, it might make you happier. Because money can't buy you love, but it can make other people happier. Happiness is infectious.
Seems to have worked for Bill Gates.
Yeah, I think it has. Mario Balotelli played at Man City.
Some people call the Windows operating system the funniest joke ever. So he's a comedian. Yeah. Mario Balotelli.
Mario Balotelli, who played for Man City, who had a reputation of being erratic on and off the pitch. I used to love reading stories about how he would drive around Manchester giving out money or go to the pub buying a round of drinks. And I said to, you know, a very successful comic, why wouldn't you do that? You've got like 50, 60 million quid, mate. Why don't you go and just stuff envelopes with fivers and just hand them out to people?
That sounds like good fun to me.
I think it'd be hilarious fun.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to be able to feel like I could do it.
Yeah, or you would go and get a couple hundred people, dress them as Rupert the Bear, and just have a parade. The fun you could have. Every year they have the Notting Hill Carnival, which I believe was started so that the black community could show, you know, the rest of London what their culture was about, and obviously in the hope that they white people would stop attacking them. But you go to Carnival now, it's a fantastic day. People dress up, and there's no point to it. It's just music and fun.
Yeah.
You know, people go, oh, there's crime or whatever, but, you know, you get that wherever you get large gatherings.
There's not that much crime at Carnival, though, is there?
No, I don't think so. But if I were to have been, a multi-millionaire, believe me, a bit of John Ryan Carnival, and I'd be encouraging people, just turn up and do what you do. But in this society that we're living in, people just, you know, they're just greedy, I think.
So this very, very rich comedian who you're not going to mention, when you suggested that, why did he say, I don't think that's a very good idea?
He thought I was after money from him.
Well, he wanted to take the first envelope.
I said, I don't want any of your money, mate. I'll come with you and help you. And then, I'm not joking you, he had got a glint in his eye and he went, yeah, the publicity for that, I'd sell tickets on my tour. I'm like, mate, here's your problem. Here's your problem. Money, you can't eat it, you can't wear it, you can't take it with you. And when you've got enough, I think you should go, stop.
You can snort cocaine through it, I suppose that's the problem.
Again, mate, your testicles are small. It all comes back to small balls, Jim.
Yeah.
But, and this is why I'm fascinated by people who, and again, because of the work I do, I know a good few people who are very wealthy. You know, you go to their houses, you've got to press a buzzer at the gate, a CCTV camera comes on you.
Yeah.
Gate opens and closes like something out of Mission Impossible. And then you walk down a gravel path so they can hear burglars, through a front door that would stop a tank, and then they've got a row of TVs in the hallway. I'm like, well, it's really cosy, isn't it?
It's very difficult to do comedy drawn from real life if that's how you live.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of the problem that some of them have. But I just think that where there is money, but again, I've been out to Afghanistan. I see the money that we spend there on our forces, and I'm not in any way being disrespectful to them. But if we were to just say Monday and Tuesday, we're not going to fire any weapons, the money that we would save, we could then invest.
Be enough for another banker to have a bonus.
Or we could just buy clown shoes for people, and everyone could walk around in clown shoes.
That's Red Nose Day, isn't it? Back to Red Nose Day.
Red noses, yeah. Well, you could do something. You know, there's got to be a way of redistributing money that involves an element of fun.
If you're feeling crap, there's a lot more out there than you might realise. You don't need endless drugs or years of psychotherapy. I've been talking to Adam Turl, who works in psychological therapy and primary care in the south of England. He told me about the wide range of support available, how, since the last government commissioned Richard Layard to write a report that showed the true cost of depression, the NHS has really stepped up its game, and what symptoms to look out for in yourself for signs of depression. There's a lot you can do quite quickly to feel better if you make the choice to do so.
We do what we call stepped care these days, and depending on the kind of chronicity and severity of difficulties people are experiencing.
Yeah.
you know, generally the first port of call would be the GP these days. Yeah. Essentially, they're the kind of coordinators now of care. So, depending on that initial presentation and what people are asking for would depend really where the GP might consider.
What sort of things are there, though? Because it's not, these days it's not just drugs, and some people might think that might be something, the one thing that's putting people off going, so I think the only solution is drugs.
Sure. Yeah, there's drugs, there is a range of talking therapies now, be it one-to-one or group work. There's a mindfulness, which isn't particularly a psychotherapy. And there is bibliotherapy on offer, guided self-help. And sometimes it's just about a little bit of, you know, what we call watchful waiting. Just there's that sense of someone's expressed something. They're part of a system now, and they're just allowed a bit of space to kind of see how things go.
Have things changed quite a bit in the way that the NHS has responded to these sorts of things?
It's an awful lot, really. I think perhaps if you look at the last... I guess the most changes that I'll be aware of would come in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Really, where it used to be, I suppose, more of a kind of secondary care, so by that we're going to be more kind of hospital-based kind of settings. But it's come more into what we call primary care, which is at the GP kind of community level.
The Layard report made a big difference.
Yeah, it did. And that was the real driving force behind the Improving Access to Psychological Therapy project, which is what, you know, certainly Time to Talk here in the South is about. And it was about bringing short-term psychological therapies into the kind of community setting, making them much more readily available.
Why do you think that report had so much impact? Is it because it was showing how much money we're wasting by not helping people with these sorts of difficulties?
Well, I think, I mean, Lord Layard being an economist, I believe, I mean, that was his remit, I think, you know, to look at the impact of mental health, and that actually it impacts on the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, tracing back, there were other studies that had looked at kind of health in general, I guess, and the impact on the functioning of a population. So he just really kind of took it specifically in the mental health area. But it provided some, I think, some very frightening figures for people.
Yeah. You mentioned CBT and mindfulness. Can you just say a little bit more about what they involve?
Well, CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, it's quite a focused form of psychotherapy, looking at the relationship between our thoughts, emotions and behaviours. It's more kind of present focused, so not necessarily about delving into the past, but it does require and ask people to have a think about you know, what they would like to get out of a process of therapy, so it's quite goal orientated as an outcome there.
So this idea of 2 years psychotherapy that maybe is another factor that might deter people, that's not what this is about at all.
No, I mean, the current IAP project looks at 20 sessions as a maximum. And for what we, you know, in our world, we kind of call the mild to moderate kind of intensity of difficulties people might have. Generally, that's about enough.
Yeah.
But there are, of course, some people that need more than that, and there are still services at secondary care level.
Yeah. And what about, say a little bit perhaps about mindfulness?
The mindfulness that the NHS uses is mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. The mindfulness is a form of meditation, and there's a range of different meditations that are out there. But I think the more accurate way of describing it would be a form of mental training. Essentially, Mark Williams some years ago kind of took the concept of mindfulness and the concept of cognitive therapy and could see where there was a good marriage there. Certainly looking at the way we relate to our thoughts. So he put together quite a formalised 8-week programme that has been taken on by the NHS specifically for recurrent depression.
Yeah.
Really. So it looks at kind of helping us to stand back from our experiences, see them in a different way.
It's about sort of taking part in the present moment rather than worrying about the past or fretting about the future.
Yeah, so giving us a different way to relate to our experience and bringing in ideas like acceptance and compassion.
Yeah. So 8 weeks doesn't sound like massively daunting for people. So is that something that you're going to get in pretty much anywhere in the UK where you go and see your GP? Is it beginning to be all over the country now?
Yes. I mean, this is how things are supposed to be. But each area and each kind of commissioning area will provide the services that they see suitable for their service.
What evidence is there for this new kind of more talking orientated approach?
Well, there is an awful lot, really. CBT particularly has been researched extensively since, really since the 70s.
Yeah.
MBCT has a more recent thing. It's research in progress, but still, I mean, that originated around the 70s over in America. But the government uses the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, NICE, to basically research what is the most appropriate and evidence-based treatments for different conditions.
Yeah.
And around depression, anxieties, that they have come up that CBT has demonstrated under research that it's the most suitable and most effective.
Yeah. Hey, what would you say to encourage men who are going through difficult times to go and talk to someone?
Oh, a difficult question, that one, to be honest. I mean, I guess that it's okay. We realise that there is a stigma still attached to mental health, unfortunately. And it's interesting that over the last few years, I think, it is coming a bit more into mainstream. We have some, I guess, people that we call celebrities that are being more open talking about their experience. So something of the kind of normalisation is happening. But everything would happen in confidence.
Yeah.
So any kind of opening up that someone might have, whatever stage it's at, be it at the GP level or subsequently with any specialist service, is always confidential.
Yeah.
So that in some way helps to protect people from what anyone else might be thinking of them, or even what they might be thinking of themselves. And even that process of opening up can be talked about in terms of how that is. Mm. So we try and make it as safe as possible. And I guess perhaps on a slightly harsher note, I mean, those statistics, I think, speak for themselves, that these things don't necessarily get better.
What sort of symptoms or signs should guys be looking out for that maybe that there is a problem? You're talking about like drinking too much and other addictive sort of behaviours.
I guess typically changes in behaviour, changes in the things we do. Perhaps changes in energy levels, and maybe if we're finding ourselves getting caught up in particular thought patterns with depression, perhaps particularly about things that have happened, so something a bit more perhaps critical or ruminative about the past. But I mean, guess changes in behaviour, typically we'd be thinking of maybe stepping back from things that maybe we'd given us pleasure, so stepping back from hobbies, not interacting socially as we might have used to have done. Yes, perhaps increased drinking, use of drugs, increased eating or lack of eating. So a change in the way we relate to our body, kind of functioning there. And perhaps also, even listening to what people around us might reflect, that perhaps we seem a bit down. Change will only occur if someone wants that to happen. And that's, I guess, kind of difficult side of the world that we work in here. It's not about maybe just taking a tablet or a bit of surgery, removing something. And that's not to kind of downplay that side of health. But therapists, in a sense, provide or help to provide the opportunity for change, but the change will still come from the individual doing something differently, trying something, taking a risk, basically. So it would be difficult to take that little risk step out of the process. And therapy isn't necessarily about saying, I've got a mental illness.
Yeah.
But maybe I'd like a bit more health.
Do you think the way society's changing is making it more difficult for people to maintain a healthy state of mental well-being?
Well, I think there is... Well, there's certainly been research done, and the evidence coming back is that, I guess, when we compare ourselves, our generation, to maybe in the 1950s, the levels of kind of anxiety are higher at a much younger age now than they would have been. So something's clearly happening around the way we kind of live in. And you know, I think the World Health Organization are predicting that, I think it's about 2020, that depression will be the second most expensive difficulty worldwide.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily predicting that this thing is going to get any easier or better.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, I mean, the way the world is certainly impacting on us as human beings, as individuals. I suppose we do have a choice as to whether we're going to take that on board individually. Yeah, that sense of what can I do for myself?
Yes, what can I do for myself? I decided that I needed a bit more laughter therapy from John Ryan. At the MHF, we've got two important projects going on in London. One south of the river, in Lambeth and Southwark, and one in the north, in Haringey. Research in both places suggests that the difficulties of midlife, like separation and divorce or redundancy, can have a major impact. So I asked John if he'd had his midlife crisis yet.
No, I'm not yet. I'm planning one. I'm getting a motorbike and a blonde.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I think because now people in their 60s and 70s are fit and healthy, you know, comparable to men in their 30s, 30, 40 years ago, aren't they?
Yeah, true.
If you ever watch on TV on the old reruns, you watch something like On the Buses or Man About the House, these guys are in like their 50s and 60s, but when you actually find out their age, they're in their early 30s. Look at the old war films.
Yeah.
You think, mate, the army were all like 55-year-olds, but that's because the food is better now. People take more care of themselves, don't they? They dress younger. Who do you know that wears a hat?
I've got a few hats.
Yeah, but do you wear like a bowler hat?
No, I don't wear a bowler hat. I like a hat. I think when you haven't got any hair, you need to wear a hat.
See, but back in the old days, people wore hats and suits, so I think they made them look older.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you look at how people look after themselves, and forgetting cosmetic surgery, I don't think you need a midlife crisis, because I think old age doesn't start until, you know, you sort of 70s or 80s now, does it?
But we still see it. So, I mean, people might look younger, but what's going on inside their heads?
Well, surely because people eat better now, that's got to make your body feel and appear to be younger than it, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was a guy in the paper recently who's 90, still working at B&Q. And you think, there's 90, well, why shouldn't he be working? And
went in there as a customer. he's still looking like Hammers.
Yeah, but if you think, even now, maybe because I'm getting older, like I work a lot with young dancers in their 20s.
Yeah.
And with the greatest respect to them, I've yet to find one that I wouldn't look at and go, that's a child. Whereas I look at women in their 50s and think, wah, look at her. You know, my son's like, Dad, that's disgusting. That's someone's gran. I'm like, wah.
Some of my age.
Gorgeous. But it is, isn't it? It's, you know, I can still... my dad, when he was my age, probably smoked a lot, probably had a beer and that. He didn't go play football. He wouldn't go for a walk. He wouldn't go for a swim. So I think now we are 20 years younger than comparable ages 30.
So does that mean we're going to buy Aston Martins and stuff when we're 60?
Well, I want a rally chopper when I turn 50. I want a rally chopper.
Did you have one when you were a kid?
Couldn't afford one.
Yeah.
But this kid called Graham used to let us ride his round the block.
Right.
He was a good lad. I think he had something wrong with him, and that was his way of making friends. But I could have been wrong. I didn't mind. I rode on his bike. But that's how it was in the old days, Jim. I think that now...
But the rally chopper has actually been redesigned for health reasons, hasn't it? Because a few people had accidents on the gear shift being in the middle of the...
in the middle of the frame.
In the middle of the frame, yeah. They've put it somewhere else.
It's health and safety
gone mad. It's health and safety gone mad, yeah.
It's the nanny state. I think that it's now, you don't have to have age-specific behaviours, do you? So if you look at some of the top sort of singers in that now, you're like Elton John.
Yeah.
He's not a spring chicken anymore, is he? Phil Collins. They're the only two I know, really. I don't like that sort of music. Luther Vandross, bless him.
Phil Collins has done anything for about 20 years, really? Mate. Yeah.
My neighbour still plays. Well, my neighbour still plays them all the time, yeah. but if you looked at, like, the Rolling Stones, they must be 100.
They must be.
But they're still rocking, aren't they?
They're still doing it.
They're still, you know,
they're still keeping fit.
Still
well, Mick Jagger had midlife crisis when he was about 18, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I think you're right on that one. Can't imagine Justin Bieber doing that.
But Justin Bieber's having a crisis right now, isn't he?
Well, he's 19, isn't he? He goes a classic, yeah. Right? He's a 19-year-old boy. He's a multi-millionaire. He can't walk down the street without getting mobbed. He's measured in terms of his success. And everyone gives the guy a hard time. So what will he be doing when he's 30, when he's 40, when he's 50? What kind of, you know, like Wayne Rooney. The guy's on £250,000 a week. He's got 80,000 people telling him he's rubbish. How do you balance the two, you know? And it's all about other people's opinions of you. I think so long as you feel...
Neither of them are real, are they? The money is ridiculous. And 80,000 people telling Wayne Rooney he's rubbish. That's ridiculous as well. He's obviously one of the best players in the country. So it's really hard to keep your feet on the ground. You're getting mixed messages from both directions, really.
Yeah, I think it's got to be about... It's how you feel within yourself, isn't it? I was always told, if you can get up in the morning and take yourself to the toilet... brush your teeth and you've got some food in the fridge, you're ahead of the game. You're doing better than most people on the planet, aren't you, really?
Yeah, but we don't feel satisfied with that.
No, I've told my son, he's 19, my ambition for all my kids was to get them to 21 with no criminal record, finish full-time education, no drink and drug problem and no kids. And if you can do that, you're going to do much better than most of the people in the area that we live in. But it's about how
that's
you
much
feel
more realistic it. Ambitions though than thinking I want them to be a, you know, classical violinist by the time they're 14 and you know, play for Manchester United.
Yeah, I couldn't have a classical violinist. That would be an indication of some sort of mental unwellness.
Wanting to play for Manchester United.
Well, even if you look at all those professional musicians, the hours that they put in practicing, that is not a normative behaviour, is it?
Yeah,
it's just being able to isolate, being able to focus. There's got to be a balance somewhere, and I don't see why you're any nearer finding it in middle age than you were as a teen.
Yeah. But maybe that's what causes people to have a crisis then, because you're still looking for an answer to a difficult question. You're hoping that you would get the answer, and you don't get it. So you still don't know how to, you know.
Do you know what you want to be doing in 5 years' time?
No, I never have done.
That's how now.
But I think that worries me more now than it did.
Why?
I suppose because I think you get more worried about money. You get more worried about, at some point, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years, I'm not going to be able to work. I don't want to work. So I need to, you know, I'm more worried about those sorts of things. So all those questions seem more difficult, in fact, rather than easier. That's why I might have a midlife crisis.
Oh, all right. Well, but
sometime
have a positive
this afternoon,
one.
I'll let you know.
Have a positive one, though. So, you know, invent something. Your midlife crisis could be finding a cure for cancer or...
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
You know, go into your shed and make something worthwhile. Don't go on a killing spree or...
No.
You know, waste all your money on gambling and all that. I just think that people who are happy, they tend to have simpler and lower expectations.
Yeah.
You know, people who are perfectionists are more likely to suffer from...
well, we're clearly not that, are we?
No, of course not. You just think, well, if I ain't got the money, I won't go out. It's not... It's about being happy with yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. But how old were you before you figured that out?
I was about 10, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I was.
You were smart.
No, because I never wanted... I guess because I was brought up in a family where... We weren't showy, so if you had something, someone would criticise it, so you wouldn't really show it, if that makes sense. So, whereas most families, you won 100 metres at the Olympics, everyone would be dead proud of you.
Yeah.
Well, in mine, there'd always be a relative who'd go, oh, who do you think he is? And so you just wouldn't... You'd not try not to excel.
You could have been a contender.
I could have been anything, really.
You could have beaten Usain Bolt if it wasn't for that, aren't he?
That's genetics, apparently. It's legs, isn't it? Leg length or something, apparently. But yeah, so I think it's about... I know that I'm not going to be doing live at the Apollo 8 out of 10 cats, and that doesn't upset me, it doesn't disappoint me, because I also know I'm not going to be running in the Olympics. But I know what I am going to be doing is trying to be happy and trying to succeed
But you get, I mean, we talked earlier about the comedians, you know, who've got earned a lot of money, but you're helping loads more people through what you do than they are through what they do. You know, the men's health work you're doing, the going to, talking to the troops and all that sort of stuff, you're making far more of a difference than they are.
But maybe that's reflected in my general happiness.
Yeah.
You know, and it make, because I haven't got to think, well, if I can't come up with a TV idea for Saturday, I'm not going to be on TV anymore, and that justifies my existence.
Yeah.
I think, okay.
But that's insecurity, isn't it? I don't exist unless I'm on television. That's
yeah, but then isn't that insecurity, isn't that what makes these people successful? That fear of failing, that kind of...
Okay, yeah.
You know, I can't imagine that Lionel Messi's missus can be very... She must go to him, come on, Lionel, mate, have a line. Have a day off. But you'd think, wouldn't you, he's worth hundreds of millions of pounds. Give someone else a chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd turn your attention to something else. I just think it's about realistic expectations of what you can have and what you can't have. So, all right, I won't run the Olympics final, but I would like to be able to walk 3 miles. You know, I'm not going to be the best boxer in the world, but I'd like to be able to lift a suitcase up onto the conveyor belt at Heathrow. I just think that, you know, people need to be more realistic about what they want.
Yeah. But you need to be happy with that.
Well, happiness, isn't it? Happiness is a temporary state caused by a lack of alcohol.
Another dose of optimism from John Ryan. Look out for more from him in the future. So the message is simple, guys. Don't chase dreams that won't make you happy anyway. And if you feel like crap, talk about it.